Matters, our mental health edition. In this show, we'll be discussing creativity and curiosity and how to encourage creativity in our children and ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, along with my co-host, Shelley Visconti, licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist. I want to welcome all of you, our Red River Radio listeners, and I want to welcome our special guest tonight, award-winning illustrator, designer, caricaturist, and art lead with Moombot Studios, Mr. Joe Bloom. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you.
And artist and psychiatrist, Dr. Patrick Sewell. Welcome, Dr. Sewell.
Thank you.
And a special guest this evening, someone somewhat familiar, I'm quite sure all of you are somewhat familiar with Kermit Poling, who will be our guest as well this evening. As many of you know, Kermit is a conductor, a concert violinist, and a composer. So we're happy to have you with us too, Kermit.
Well, thank you as well.
It's nice to have you as a guest.
It's rather, an interesting position to be in.
Yes, so rather than running everything, right? So we invite all of you, our listeners at Red River Radio, to call in your questions, join our conversation, make your contributions. Our number is 1-800-552-8502. Again, 1-800-552-8502. Tonight, our program was really stimulated from our last month's program, during which 14 or 15 of you participated. And one of you had an excellent question about how to increase positivity in your children. A young woman called in and asked that question, and as a result of that question, we're turning our attention to curiosity and creativity tonight with Dr. Sewell, with Joe Bloom, and with Kermit Poling. Shelley, let's start with you. Let me ask you, you've been researching creativity. Can you talk a little bit about what is creativity?
Well, I found a lot of different definitions. Most of them, however, talked a little bit about novelty and producing something new or thinking something new. So a lot of them involved novelty. But basically, creativity, they talked about it being characterized by originality, expressiveness, and imagination. And also some of the research stated that, you know, some people are more naturally creative than others. But the good news is that creativity is a skill that can be improved. So even those of us who maybe aren't naturally creative, we can boost our creativity.
Okay. Well, that's thank you. Let me turn to you fellas, Dr. Sewell, Joe Bloom. You're two artists. Dr. Sewell, how do you see creativity? What is it? What is it for you?
Well, it's play for me. It's simply flowing, being responsive to some inner signal or desire to express myself, and has a little purpose beyond that. Not really any result, just having fun.
Joe?
I think he hit on a key word there, at least for me, is play. Mm-hmm. The fact that you get to, or the opportunity to get to create something or make things with both a craft and an imagination, I think is can keep you happier and keep you motivated to continue to play as a child, as an adult. And for me, as long as you have the opportunity to be enthusiastic about what you're creating and playing, that feels like creativity to me.
Kermit, you're still sitting here.
Yeah, and I would agree. You know, it's interesting because from when I was a child, it was just something that I would do. I would sit at the piano and just play and just make up stuff. And I know that a lot of people do that. A lot of musicians start doing that. And there's no other reason to do that other than it was just fun to do and just see where it takes you. And I think that's definitely certainly a part of the process.
You know, now, Dr. Sewell, I see that you're drawing right now. You're doing some sketching. And here I'm wanting you to pay great attention to what's going on. And you're just doodling. What's going on here?
Well, doodlers, it's been established doodlers pay better attention than non-doodlers.
Okay.
Now, that's factual.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, listeners, Red River Radio listeners, please join our conversation with us this evening. Again, our number is 1-800-552-8502. 8502. We're all, I invite you to call in and talk to our experts tonight, all three of whom are highly creative people. While people are thinking about this and joining our conversation, Shelley, what's the difference you mentioned earlier between everyday and extraordinary creativity?
Well, we all have to be a little creative just to get through the day. We're constantly being bombarded with changing situations that we really need to be a creative to get through these situations. So really, the research says that small acts of creativity, so the everyday kind of creativity, isn't that different fundamentally than some of these brilliant leaps of creativity that we see with like Einstein and people like that. Basically, what great creators and everyone else does are there's a kind of a step-by-step process, whether we realize it or not. But basically, it involves preparatory work. So just kind of getting ready and beginning to focus and explore, and then incubation. So this is just a temporary break. It may not appear that anything really is happening, but it's almost like a marinating on the idea and thinking about it. And then there is the insight, the aha moment, when we finally realize that, okay, this is what I need to do. This is how I solve the problem, or this is how I am going to approach this. And so then we go to verification. So we actually implement whatever it is that we've come up with.
You know, Shelley, I think I'm going to ask Dr. Sewell this question, because I think it's going to be his answer is probably going to be in total contrast to what you've just said. Dr. Sewell, you know, what do you think about this preparatory process? Then there's the incubation process. And
I actually like it, but I don't think it's occurring in sequence necessarily. I think it's, I call it cooking, just flowing and responding. I don't think it all comes from within. I think it's not a straight line. I think you wander, you explore. I think it more like a amoeba, a pseudopod, seeking out, probing, and then all of a sudden things come into focus and some hole is created. And often, in my case at least, I discovered about the same time some others with me discovers it. And there's no real intent. It builds, and if you're doing something that involves other people, there's synergism even there. It's more like it's not an individual product even. It's all coming from a variety of sources that you're assimilating without intent.
Kermit, you want to pipe in here?
Well, you know, for me, I think the whole thing, this is one of the reasons why I think that arts and education is so important. I think that that imagination, that stimulation, whatever it is, goes hand in hand with all of the other learning that we do. One of the things that I always, as a musician, found fascinating when I was in school in Boston, that one of the finest orchestras in Boston was at MIT. It was not a professional orchestra. These were all of the brilliant people that were scientists at MIT, and yet they played magnificently. I think all of us probably know, have friends, colleagues who are doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, mathematicians, who are also on the side, like Dr. Sewell here. They have their creative side. And I think that creativity, presumably starting from a very young age, was something that inspired their success in the rest of their careers. I think those of us who are actively involved in the arts find this all the time. And it's one of the worries when we see that arts programs are tending to get cut from schools. I'm sure, Joe, you probably would agree.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you said everything and more than what I can think of. But going back to what Shelley was talking about, one thing that, and this is a little more rigid than Dr. Sewell put so well.
Thank you for that.
Yes, Dr. Sewell. You said it really well, and you have to be very fluid with your work. But what I tend to find at the end of every day or in the beginning of every day when I'm working on something is that there's two sides of my brain and there's two sides of a process. there is the inspiration and the idea and what motivates you and inspires you, but then there's also the craft. And I find that myself and a lot of creative people I know, you have to be able to bounce back and forth between those two. I recently did a couple paintings on this topic because you feel so torn. You feel very diametric. You feel very, very split personality when you are trying to come up with fluid ideas and inspiring ideas, and sometimes they come in the most random moments. But then when you have to execute and you have to pick up a paintbrush or a pencil or a musical instrument, it comes down to a very disciplined craft and a focus, which I think sometimes comes from a very different part of the brain. But it is important because you find that creativity and inspiration in math and in sports and in a lot of the programs that are in schools that I think you're right. I think that it's very discredited. And it's really important to keep arts alive because they are so connected with all curriculum.
Yeah, and you're talking about that as part of the process. And, of course, you have the
Absolutely.
Discipline that you have to get the work done. Now, I don't know about you. For me, I love that imagination, coming up with the initial ideas and all of that. But then there is, and I hate to put it this way, drudgery is maybe too strong of a word, but the part where, you know, it just doesn't magically appear. Somehow you have to get it into the final product. And so the discipline is the tough part of being creative, but I think it's that same, as you're saying, that's part of it, but I think that that's also what gets stimulated in those people who go into other fields, the mathematicians and all of that.
So definitely.
They do this that pairing that go hand in hand.
I don't see a clear distinction between the craft and the creative process. The it's sort of like the craft evolves, it comes as well, and it's not in lockstep, but it feeds on what you did yesterday. Your craft gets better, your associations get better, you spontaneously arrive at solutions that you didn't even know you had a problem to before. And it's just a rolling forward, almost. I experience it as a kind of a tumbling process that I'm just along for the ride with.
Yeah.
Now, you do have to know how to nail things together if you're going to build something.
You know, Shelley, we were talking, some of the guys have just been mentioning some personality traits and personal characteristics that are associated with creativity. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, this isn't true for everyone, but overall what the research has found is that highly creative people tend to be very open to new experiences. We tend to be less conventional, and I think that probably comes from the openness to new experiences. Interestingly, less conscientious, and I wonder if it's because of the self-focus that may be involved in the creative process. I don't know.
I often accuse Dr. Sewell of being less than conscientious and somewhat self-focused, but I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay. Self-confidence, self-accepting, driven, ambitious, and I can definitely see how those would be personality traits of creative people. Interestingly, dominant, hostile, I guess we can be a little moody maybe.
Hostile?
Yes, hostile. That's what the research says.
The research says that creative people are generally more hostile than...
This must be a different group than the people you have here.
I said not everybody. impulsive. And that kind of speaks to what y'all have been talking about, is this ability to kind of flow and be able to kind of jump from one thing to another.
You know, Shelley, this adds up to the word free.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that's the most important consideration. There's freedom. You're not committed to any particular result. You're there for you. You're not bound by a convention or any type of tracking with expectations, and you are moving towards that which appeals to you. And it's a freedom. And that freedom, embraced in a person's makeup, taught by art perhaps, can serve them all over their life.
Well, I know Albert Einstein used to say, or did say, that you cannot be creative unless you have freedom first. You've got to have freedom before the creative spirit will come.
Trust, too. Trust in self. Conviction that you have, that there is a product, there is a substance in there that you can rely on, that'll take you somewhere without you trying to beat yourself to death about it. Just enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, we invite our listeners, Red River Radio listeners, come to us, join our conversation, 1-800-552-8502. Let's talk a little bit, guys, about creativity in children. Shelley, you got some ideas about that from the research, and then we'll let the guys pipe in?
Well, creativity is something that comes very natural to children. Children have just natural creative abilities. And childhood is one of the only times in our life that, creative work comes so naturally to most of us, not everyone. But it's really natural during childhood. Creativity in children can really help them to embrace uncertainty, to explore, to adapt. There's research involving children who have undergone different traumatic experiences, and being able to have creative outlets and so forth that were really helpful for the children. Creative people in children in general tend to be risk takers. They're imaginative. They're determined. And they kind of tend to make up their own rules, so they may be a little difficult at times.
Okay. Kermit, I don't want to put a label on you, but people have sort of referred to you as being somewhat of a child prodigy. I don't want to label you.
I'm a little old for that now, but if I could still be a child prodigy in my mid-50s, I'll accept it. I was fortunate. I don't know if I'd use that necessarily, but I was fortunate that, from a very early age, I started playing piano when I was 5, violin when I was 6, and probably started writing music of some sort, maybe not long after that. But I think, if you put any young child in a room without anything else to do but have a piece of paper and maybe some crayons, they'll start drawing on it. They'll start, it might not be anything that we would look at and go, this is an elephant or something, but they'll start creating something. I think it's probably true that if you left a piano in a room with someone and a young child, that they would probably go over to it and at least start, plinking on some of the keys. I think Shelley's right in that, I think just about any child, given the chance, will be creative at least on some level. That doesn't mean they're going to be necessarily the next Mozart, but that they don't have to be. The creativity can be channeled into so much later on as they mature and have more opportunities to be able to do that.
Joe, will you and Dr. Sewell, will you guys talk about that question and your early childhood and how creativity was kind of incubated in you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be integral to be able to express freely, as Dr. Sewell said. I think that's really important, that word freedom. And that's what you experience more purely as a child. So to be encouraged from that age and then continually as you get older, and to have that freedom to explore and not feel encumbered or comfortable. One thing that I think really helped me, and the older I get, the more and more I realize it was really essential to me following what I wanted to follow creatively, is my parents really pushed me. They really pushed and were very critical, but they also encouraged in the same note. They didn't just say, this is great what you're doing, and continue to do that and pat me on the head. They actually pushed and took an interest in those sorts of things that I was doing, drawing and painting, and they allowed me to continue to express myself freely. I think that's really, really important in those critical years, because then you remember how that feels as you get older, and you have to continue to try to be a child as you grow up to be able to express yourself.
Dr. Sewell, I'm going to come back and let you speak to this issue, but before we do that, we have a caller.
Yes, we have Mason from Clarksdale on the line. Mason, go ahead.
Yeah.
Welcome.
You said prodigy. Now, the prodigy means a lot of different things. And what define prodigy in your own perspectives?
Kermit, you're the only one who comes close to this that I know of.
Well, generally we refer to a prodigy as being someone from a very young period in their life showing a talent that we generally consider to be exceptional, an adaptability that is exceptional. It is hard to define, because I find, especially in this day and age, there are so many talented young people, and I'm going to refer to a program that we're going to start airing again on our station that we've aired in the past called From the Top, which is all of these wonderful, young, talented players. And there are so many of them coming out of school, so many of them are studying. I'm referring, of course, to music, but I'm sure it covers all of the arts. So to be able to define someone that is truly above that or outstanding is a little tough. But I'm not terribly sure that that's necessarily so important. I mean, to me, it's fascinating that Mozart, for example, started composing at an extremely early age. But, you know, he was dead by the time he was in his 30s. So he accomplished everything that we know of his music in just a very short period of time. You know, composers like Schubert were the same way. We have much longer lifespans now in general. Hopefully we don't burn ourselves out by that time. And perhaps because, you know, society is so different where, you know, we're able to listen to something again and again and again. In those days, you'd go into a concert hall, you'd hear something once, and that'd be the only time in your life. Maybe you heard it. Now we've got multiple recordings, that type of thing. So I don't know that is necessarily such a thing that's necessarily needs to be defined. If someone has talent, it should be encouraged, whether you considered them to be a prodigy or not, at least in my opinion.
That's right.
Well, Mason, thank you for your... Go ahead, Mason.
That's right. Oh, well, some things are better left undefined than defined.
Well, if you're looking for an answer on that question, you just got it from the horse's mouth.
Yeah.
So we have another call, Shelley.
Go ahead with your question. I'm sorry.
Sure. My question is directed to Shelley and to Joe. And it's essentially, I'm wondering if there is any research, Shelley, and from Joe's perspective, as somebody who works dealing not only in the written language, but as an animator, if there is any sort of research out there showing that if somebody has multiple skills, like Joe, for example, where it's in the written format and drawing, does it tend to enhance the creativity cross borders in terms of the talents that are presented?
Joe, you want to speak to that?
Well, I've always had a mantra or a sort of goal of my own that is that I'm going to follow whatever I feel inspired by. I'm going to go in any direction that it's sort of a whim or whatever pulls me. So when I was young, I was told I have to pick one thing and always do that one thing to be successful at anything. And it's a recurring theme people keep telling me in my life. And so I make it a point to try to explore different things. And I'm curious, if you don't mind a little departure, to hear Dr. Sewell's thoughts on this too, but I've always found that every single piece of creativity and craft that you dive into, it feeds into another very naturally. Mm-hmm. So to not follow that, I think, would be stifling yourself or limiting yourself.
Pat, do you want to speak to that?
Oh, well, I absolutely agree with that last statement. I've forgotten the first core part.
The first part was whether there was any research that Shelley had come across where it indicated.
I think you're sort of crossbreeding eternally, and you benefit from doing that. And the more you nurture your sort of inner voice and exploration, and get out of the way, and don't judge yourself, and don't look for particular results, you will travel to new territory, and then you will grow from that. I mean, if you doodle this year from now, your doodle would be better. And you don't have to really have any intent to get to the better doodle. It's the practice, the expression that takes you there.
And what do you mean by getting out of the way?
Don't judge yourself. And you're not looking for a particular result. At least, ultimately, you are, as we get to the craft and the finished product. But you're not trying to take yourself between down the road between white lines and get to any particular point. You're wanting to trust your resources and let this process unfold and let yourself unfold. Now, if you're doing more than one thing, they will feed off each other. And I like what Joe says. You follow that whim and catch that wave and see where it takes you, and it'll stay with you. So it'll inform tomorrow. It does.
Now, Shelley, he was asking, too, about what does the research show on this issue?
Well, there's a lot of different research out there about creativity and multiple creativities. And people who tend to be creative do tend to be able to apply those skills to multiple areas. So, again, as I was talking about the kind of everyday creativity and then the exceptional creativity. So if you are an exceptionally creative person, then, of course, you're going to be able to apply that to kind of everyday skills. And then, you know, vice versa, if you're very good at kind of handling mundane kind of everyday kind of tasks, then you're also going to be able to, if you really apply those skills, to be able to really accomplish some pretty fantastic things.
And okay. If I may say one more thing, there's because sure. The topic is mental health. I mean, the being creative alone or pursuing one endeavor can feel very good. But what I found that feels even better and keeps you fresh, keeps you more inspired, and keeps you driving forward in a happier lifestyle is to be able to pursue those tangents that you come across. It's like your creative life is a big pond full of lily pads. And if you want to explore the pond, you can't just sit on one lily pad and say, I really know this really well. To be able to hop from each one and start to learn each piece of it, you start to learn the pond better. I don't know if that's a weird metaphor, but
I'm thinking about personally because my undergraduate degree is in art and then my graduate degree is in psychology, and I use art therapy. And so I've found ways to take my interest in art and apply it to other areas and other fields. So, yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Again, we ask our callers, come join us, join our conversation, 1-800-552-8502. Shelley, let's turn our attention to last month's caller. How does creativity benefit children? And then my next question is going to be, how do we promote creativity as parents?
Well, creativity is going to benefit children in numerous ways. You're going to see improved language skills, reading comprehension, motivation, confidence, desire to learn. They're going to be more independent. They're going to be more achievement-oriented. They're going to have higher self-esteem. And you're also going to see less behavioral problems. And again, that's because of that outlet that they have for the emotions, the anger, and so forth that they may be experiencing. It's a way for them to express themselves. When they might not be able to express themselves verbally, then they might be able to express themselves another way, maybe through written language or through visual arts or music or whatever. It's also going to help them to solve problems. Again, going back to that thought of being able to take creativity and really apply it to several different areas. So it's going to benefit children in numerous ways.
Now, Joe, you and Dr. Sewell and Kermit, all of you were creative kids. And so the question is, how did being kind of a creative kid help you in your development and in your life path?
Creativity gives you an experience, and it facilitates development of self, independent of all the tangle related to being involved with people and working out things with people. I mean, you've got an accessible world to the extent that you're alive and you're capable of resonating and enjoying and drawing joy and inspiration from expression. Fleshes you out as an independent person. And I think in the end, that's what we have to do because we can't be tied for all of our experience and our involvement with people and work, etc. We've got to have sources to feel fully alive and expressive independent of those things.
And in a very simple, I would say quantifiable way for me, I recall, being able to express myself or to be able to create, whether it's drawing or whether it's through math or whatever I used as a child, gave me, I think, the confidence to be able to handle both criticism and praise. And it's a funny thing. I have three brothers and a sister, so it was a very different set of reactions that we had when someone would praise or criticize you based on what our ambitions were and what we liked to do. And in creating and drawing, I would have both that critical eye and feedback from people, which at first was very hard to take, but then you grow a thick skin and you start to understand it and appreciate it. And then on this flip side, which kind of sounds silly, but I think anyone who is creative and has been there, when you get compliments around people as a child, it's hard to take at first. It's a very strange thing to be told, you're very good at this, and you have siblings and family around you who have to then react to how you react, but you start to be able to be more social, I think, and more comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah, I would. I think that really does make a lot of sense. There's a certain benefit when you have those opportunities, even though you might be shy about it, and I know I was for a long time, you know, people would be saying, oh, you know, that's wonderful and all of that. But on the other hand, it's a confidence builder. And anybody who knows me knows I have a lot of confidence, I guess. But it really does. It sort of helps set your path through life. Now, in my case, I never wanted to be anything else other than a musician. My mom wanted me to be a pianist. I heard a violinist play when I was in the first grade, signed up for violin classes, and never told my parents. So they found out about it when they got the bill. Mm-hmm. So I was more drawn to the violin. So I was already choosing my path, not exactly the same as what they thought. I came from a musical family, so it seemed logical that I was going to go in a certain direction. And I did. But, you know, in my case, you know, I ended up going into a number of different things. And, you know, as many people know, I mean, violin, piano, I write. You know, I've done all kinds of different music, everything from pops arrangements to film scores to more serious works. So, and then running a radio station, you think, well, what is that? But it's so closely associated with arts and culture that it just, I think all of that goes back to those initial years when I was given the opportunity. And I think that's mostly it. It was given the opportunity to be able to do that. And I got to make those choices.
Shelley, I think we have a caller.
Yes, we do. Thank you so much for holding, Stephanie. Go right ahead with your question. Stephanie?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to know, what do you think about the concept of right-brain versus left-brain people? And if you are a left-brained person, what can you do to make yourself more creative?
There, that's a good question. Left-brain, right-brain dilemma. Dr. Sewell, our noted psychiatrist, you want to take that one on?
Right. Well, the brain certainly has islands of function, but what we want is a brain that is, let's say, clicking on all cylinders, getting information from all sources, and is not confined one to the other. And so I believe that if you set out to express yourself, that you will begin, and you're not censored and held back and looking for any particular result, you will begin to draw from all varieties and all places in your brain, and you will create an autonomous experience for yourself. So some people are confined to thinking and result and perfection and so forth, and if they are, they're going to have a hard time breaking loose from those kinds of things, but the exercises in doing so are worthwhile for them.
Well, you know, Kermit mentioned earlier, he was talking about the art programs in school. And, of course, reading, writing, and arithmetic are sort of left brain functions, unless you get into geometry. But programs in art, the visual arts, painting, drawing, sculpture, etc., music, and so on, mm-hmm. are all in and of themselves kind of right brain tasks, are they not, Kermit?
Well, that's what they say, and that, you know, being enough of a researcher to know exactly how that works, we say that. I think there is a point of balance where you get benefits from it. In other words, you can't just focus on those things you think would be logical. Well, we want to have more people who are involved in the sciences, so let's really just focus on those fields, you know, mathematics and chemistry and that type of thing. And yet, we find that those countries that rate the highest in the sciences are also those countries that spend a great deal of their resources on arts, because it's that imagination that stimulates the creativity. You need creativity to be able to make new discoveries, to look, to think out of the box, as we commonly say. Mm-hmm. So I think that in order to make us better left brain people, we need to be as good as we can as right brain people, so that we can look off in other directions that may not seem like they relate to anything in the arts, but at the root they really are.
Joe, do you have a comment on left versus right brain?
Yeah, I mean, Stephanie asked about practice or application of this, or try to get better at being more, I guess, right brained. One thing that I find is when I'm working in a bubble or when I'm too focused and I lose a bit of that creativity, the things that really help me are exposure and education, whether it's looking at other artists or being part of a community and seeing other artwork, or just that community. the networking of friends and being inspired by other people's perspectives. That sort of opens up my eyes quite a bit. And whenever I'm in the studio painting or drawing too much and have my head down too much, getting out and fraternizing with other artists and opening a book and learning something else about another art form that I don't know, or reminding myself of different painters out there or people that do things that are really inspiring that are a little different than what I've been focusing on, really starts to ruminate and you start bubbling again. And then I think it just kind of breeds creativity. But exposure and community is big to me.
You know, Shelley, you've done some research on this question, and I should have probably asked you this before, but Stephanie asked it first. Mm-hmm. You know, what have you found in the literature about how parents can promote creativity in their children?
Well, there are many different ways, and it's very important, especially today, that we really focus on promoting creativity in children, because technology, while it's a wonderful thing, technology, the media, these things have really changed the way that we experience childhood and have really become an impediment to creativity in some ways. You know, used to, if you wanted to entertain yourself, you had to be creative, but now you just turn on a TV or a video game or so forth. So really with parents, what they need to do is really encourage independence, allow children to make mistakes and to learn from them, encourage children to be playful, encourage humor, and have the child be spontaneously creative. If the child asks you to tell a bedtime story, have them maybe tell you a bedtime story. You know, hold an impromptu concert. Make some musical instruments out of household items. You know, so being spontaneous and really playful. And then also helping children to develop what we call divergent thinking. So being able to come up with multiple solutions to problems. And celebrating creativity, really stressing the importance of creativity. Take them to the museum, take them to the ballet, talk about your favorite writer, talk about your favorite artist, or read together, your favorite scientist. Really celebrate creativity. Limit that TV and that screen time. You know, really force children to play creatively and entertain themselves creatively. And then also encourage some intrinsic motivation. Really have the motivation come from within instead of, you know, from other places. And just keep some creative stuff around, some supplies around that kids can get their hands on if they want to have an impromptu concert, if they want to be able to create a collage or whatever. Have the stuff there for them to be able to build and to play.
I know I remember learning something about Steven Spielberg when he was a little boy. He made home movies, and he always wanted only his family members to be in the home movies or his friends. He did not want stars in his movies, and he refused to have them, but he became somewhat of a creative person. Do you guys have some ideas about promoting creativity in children?
Well, I was thinking about Shelley's summary there. Pulling up to the banquet, teaching the children there's a banquet out there, they've got a capacity to resonate with it, and they've got an ability to contribute to it and catch those waves from it, rather than confining themselves to specific tracks and an adaptable life, breaking free. And all the ways to encourage that, so important.
Joe, do you have a thought?
I think Shelley had some great ideas. I'm going to go home and do some of those.
Right, exactly.
That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. All right, listen to us, Red River Radio listeners. Come to us, join us, participate in our conversation. Call us at 1-800-552-8502. Join our conversation. Your questions, your ideas, anything you want to contribute, please know that we want to hear from you. Shelley, before we get a call, let me sneak in a quick question about educators and schools and promoting creativity.
Yeah, well, we had already discussed a little bit about how arts funding has been cut. And unfortunately, you know, just the nature of school, because there does need to be structure and because there does need to be some conforming and so forth that happens, that can kind of stifle creativity a little bit. So Really, educators, teachers should try to, again, promote that intrinsic motivation, so that motivation that comes from within rather than from external sources. Promote problem solving through divergent thinking. So again, have kids come up with multiple solutions to problems, brainstorm. Give students a variety of activities to be able to choose what they want to participate in. Give them some choice. And then also challenge students to solve problems that really don't have well-defined answers. So, for example, maybe ask them to develop a robot that packs lunches. How do you answer that question? Well, there's a million different ways. So you know, really have students answer problems that there's not really a good answer for. Have them answer open-ended questions with multiple creative responses. So what would a home look like in 100 years? So again, those open-ended where there's multiple answers possible. And then also to keep in mind that there is a creative slump that starts right around the fourth grade, so about the time of adolescence as adolescence sets in. And so right around that time, teachers, parents also are going to need to be able to pay close attention and really start motivating creativity in children.
Well, so much about school is mastery, you know, meeting standards, meeting expectations, achievement and test scores and so on and so forth. Let me go back to you, Dr. Sewell. You and I are longtime friends, and you were talking here about education versus how a person is raised. Given your background, would you share a little bit about yourself and how did you, I mean, Kermit said he always wanted to be a musician. How did you decide to become a psychiatrist, and how did you become an artist, a writer, a stone sculptor, a painter? How did your childhood, how is it an antecedent for that kind
of... How much time do we have?
I'll give you 60 seconds.
Okay. Well, you know, there you see in the news and lay publications about helicopter moms and tiger moms and so forth. Well, I didn't have one. I had a sort of an idyllic greenhouse-type circumstance with a whole lot of freedom and a whole lot of support and very little supervision or oversight. So I had freedom. Plus, I had models of people who were highly individualized and expressive and who were enjoying their life and doing their thing. And nobody appeared to be interested in telling me what to do or stopping from doing what I wanted to do. And so I roamed freely, and I still do that in my mind. And so that's taken me down many paths. And it's allowed me to pay attention to that which actually sings to me internally. I don't have to adapt to some outside set of expectations. I can follow my own song, so to speak, to the extent I have to pay my bills and so forth. But I can pursue that which gives me an autonomous experience in contrast to in pursuit of something interpersonally or some result externally. I'm simply responding to what's meaningful to me. So I discovered, where psychiatry is concerned, I discovered the disgratification, trying to understand people and being involved with people. And I moved around a lot, and so I made my way and made my place with family after family. And I think I carried that right on into a career of finding a place with the people that show up to see me and enjoying them and valuing them and being interested in them. And then in my creative expression, simply recognizing that I'm drawn to patterns and designs and colors and forms and just valuing that and living out of that way without concern for outcome. Now, I'm not trying to make a living doing this. I might have to be getting a little more practical if I were to do that, but I hadn't had to do that.
Okay, thank you. Joe, do you have any comment on any of that?
That sounded wonderful.
Okay.
No, it's funny. What Shelley was saying earlier about habits and practices to help develop creativity in children sounds a lot like a day at Moonbot Studios where I work, which is kind of silly. Cool. But and, I mean, to be honest, it really does feel like that. There's, you know, you have to figure out what a house from 100 years from now, you know, can look like. Mm-hmm. And you have to think of a solution to a problem that does not exist yet. Mm-hmm. And we do have a creative lull after lunch, not after fourth grade. But it is funny how you have to constantly give yourself challenges. That's what I've found, is constantly push yourself to try new things and to try other people's disciplines to help problem solve. Sometimes fresh perspectives really help. And what I'll do when I'm doing like storyboarding or character design on a short film or for a video game, I'll go to an animator, or I'll go to some of our programmers, our engineers at Moonbot, who, you know, code apps and games. And they sometimes, because of the cross disciplines that they have, they do very technical things. They have such a fresh creative eye for those kind of things that sometimes it'll spark new ideas out of you. So that's something that I really like. Cross-pollination really helps.
Shelley, we have a question from Cora Meyer. If you don't mind me reading it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Cora writes this, I don't know that I have a question per se, but I am interested in folk art and outsider art. I have in my home some art created by people who had developmental problems and mental health issues. I bought some of this art at a silent auction benefiting outsider artists, some directly from the artist and some from the mother of another artist. I know that art is frequently an outlet for people who have difficulty with what we call an abnormal life. Do you think that sometimes there is a danger of exploitation of such artists if their art or type of art becomes popular or a fad? I'm thinking of Reverend Howard Finster and Moises Tolliver, for example. If this is off topic, please excuse me. Well, Cora, we're not going to excuse you. We're going to talk about your question, and thank you for submitting it. Guys, what do you think?
I think this question comes down to each individual, honestly. For me personally, I see a great, I don't know, it's a sort of open smorgasbord of possibilities of how great art can be from people with developmental issues or mental issues. And we've seen that in the past. There's a lot of artists out there who get known, I think, partially because of that and partially because of the quality of the art and the unencumbered nature of which it's created, I think, to, you know, at least relative to the average person. As far as exploitation goes, I think that's a two-sided thing. That can come from people who are trying to exploit it or try to financially gain from that story or from the fad. But from someone who collects it, like this person's question, if they're genuinely interested in that, then I don't think that they should have the guilt of exploitation. If you genuinely enjoy it, then I see wherever the art comes from, then you're actually appreciating. Then if it's sincere for you, then you should just enjoy it as much as you possibly can.
Dr. Sewell, you have some ideas about mental health?
I think Joe said it well. You needn't be concerned about exploitation. If you enjoy it, enjoy it. Certainly it's going on in some places. And at the same time, it can give a lot of gratification to these people and have their art accepted and appreciated.
Would Clyde Connell's art be considered primitive art?
No.
How would you classify her work?
I'm not an art critic, but she was a mainstream contemporary artist and whose art was very expressive of large social themes and was appreciated as such. And she was somewhat self-trained, but crossbred or hybridized with the art scene throughout that was going on during her life.
Okay. Shelley, we have another call.
We certainly do. We have Susan from Jefferson. Susan, go right ahead.
Yes, hi, y'all. I wanted to know what you would do if you're having a mental block, a creative artist mental block.
That is an excellent question, Susan. Thank you for asking. We were going to deal with that a little bit later or address it a little bit later, but now is a good time.
Sure.
Kermit, do you want to speak to that? Have you experienced that in your experience?
Oh, sure. And, you know, that's a really, really tough question to answer in some ways, because sometimes I'll just stare, which accomplishes nothing. I think what Joe said earlier about looking into other things, looking at other art, looking in my case, you know, maybe listening to some other music, maybe I'll read something for a little while. Basically, I'll go away from what I'm trying to do at that moment and then come back. Ultimately, if it's a question of deadlines, and deadlines can be a real inspiration sometimes because you have no choice, you have to get something done, I'll just start experimenting. Sometimes that's the only way you can do it. Start coming up ideas. I might just sit there at the keyboard and start playing some things, and something might please me, and I'll go, oh, hey, that's not a bad idea. And I'll copy that or make a recording of it, and I'll maybe come up with ones later on. But I don't think there's any set method that I use. It's sort of, you know, whatever I feel I need to do at the moment. But we all get them. I'm sure that I don't think I've ever met an artist in any form of art that doesn't suffer from that at some point.
Joe,
I mean, I would just say generally removing yourself from the hyper focus of solving that particular problem. Just getting a fresh eye on anything, looking at something else, looking at it from a different angle, trying a different problem and coming back to it. Sometimes time is all you need when you have a mental block.
Yeah, I think remembering you're still in there, and just get out of the way, and you'll be back.
Again, I want to invite you, our listeners, 1-800-552-8502. Call and join our conversation. Shelley, a couple quick questions. Creativity in adults versus creativity in children?
Creativity in children and adults is a little bit different. The creative work of adults tends to be novel and original. The creative work of children, they tend to be rediscovering things. So things that others have already discovered, but for them it's new. So it's a discovery for them, but it's also a rediscovery. And then also thinking about that, kind of mentioned it earlier about that kind of lull in creativity that can happen around adolescence. But there is this kind of U-shaped development curve of creativity. So you have this very high creativity in early childhood. So there's a lot of play, there's a lot of freedom. And then there's that dip in adolescence around 9 years old. And then during adulthood, creativity should come reemerge, but kind of in a slightly different form, a little more mature, sophisticated form.
Okay. Well, let me ask this question of you fellows. How can we as adults increase our own creativity? How do we do that? Pat, do you have some ideas?
Well, I start off by valuing it. I mean, there is something there for you, but you have to say, this is something I'm going to be about. I'm going to play with this. I'm going to embrace it. Get involved.
So you have to make it a priority.
And I think we've had plenty of advice about how to get involved, but get involved. Value it. Like you value somebody you're sitting with, value them. Well, value your expressiveness. Value your exploration, your self-expression. And you will move if you do that. You can't be looking for specific results and timetables and so forth, but if you see it as play and as a let's say an important way of being, you will develop.
Joe, do you want to add?
There is something to be said about completing ideas. I find that I am more motivated after I actually finish something that's been on my brain or something that I've been trying to do that's creative. I'm more motivated to do the next thing. I'm more motivated to take on the next idea. But if I don't complete that, if they're just thoughts or if they're just noodling around, I find that I get less motivated to do more of that. So sometimes it's about the achievement step by step that really keeps me pushing forward.
I see Dr. Sewell here doodling, but you were talking about noodling?
Yeah, well, noodling. Playing, doodling, I guess toying around with ideas. We all have ideas. I think even people who don't consider themselves creative people have wonderful creative ideas. And they're, you know, people who are artists, I don't think they necessarily have better ideas all the time. It's that often they follow through with them. One of the hardest working and most talented artists I know would work a day job at an animation studio and then go home and work on her own comics and books. And the amount of discipline and focus that took seemed almost like drudgery. But at the end of all that, completing these tasks, she seemed far more inspired to be creative to work on the next project than someone who goes home and turns on the TV and has just as brilliant an idea.
So perhaps one size doesn't fit all.
Yeah.
Kermit, do you have some ideas about...
Well, I think Joe's... I guess I'm more closely aligned with Joe on that. It's like when you finish a project and you can... look back on it and I say a project, you might say just completed a piece or a ballet or something, and I think, you know, there's that sense of relief, you know, you made your deadline, but then you're anxious to get started on the next thing because you've got this rhythm going and you want to keep that going. And you know, the sense that you've accomplished something is certainly in and of itself a reward and stimulating. I don't know whether that's adrenaline or what, but it does you kind of feed upon your own creativity, and that makes you more creative. I know that sounds really silly, like some sort of
sometimes
vicious circle.
No, it's like
it's
unlocking it through momentum and through repetition. Yeah. That's at least I find that to be helpful.
Well, Joe, you're quite a young person sitting here, and Kermit, you announced earlier that you were 50 or something like that.
Somewhere around there.
Well, Dr. Sewell and I are kind of approaching antiques.
Advanced.
we're advanced. I like the word. We're advanced. So my question is, Shelley, what do we know about how creativity can benefit older adults?
Well, I mean, the same way it can benefit all of us, but specifically some of the research, some of the specific issues or problems that older people may experience, such as adapting to physical, psychological, emotional changes. So just as kids with trauma, how it can help them adjust, it can help older adults also adjust to some of the changes. It encourages reflection, so looking back on one's life and reflecting. It helps to deepen their sense of purpose and understanding of themselves. It helps to create feelings of competence, growth, productivity. It improves clarity, awareness. It increases social and leisure activities. There's some interesting research on older adults, and there was one study in particular that I thought was very interesting about older adults in choral groups. And all they did was just practice and perform together once a week. And after a year, their quality of life was just incredibly improved. There were less falls. There were less doctor's visits. They had less vision problems, less depression, less loneliness. They took less medication. So just from being involved in a choral group weekly had all of these really wonderful benefits.
That's an interesting piece of research. Let me ask you a quick question, too. If you could just comment on the link between creativity and intelligence.
Yeah, well, creativity and intelligence are, there's a link, but it's up to about an IQ of 120. So an above average IQ, but beyond really a 120 IQ, there's not much of a link. But so it doesn't, a person doesn't have to be creative to be intelligent, and they don't have to be intelligent to be creative. You know, there is a link, but it's not a strong link. You can have one or the other. You don't have to have both, or you can have both.
Do you have a comment on that, Dr. Sewell?
I was thinking we may have proof of that in this room.
And what proof do you have?
The absence of the link.
Well, I know we do have some very creative people as our guest tonight. So you're questioning just how intelligent are we?
There you go.
Okay.
So, you know, it's worth emphasizing, and perhaps this is my take on it, but I think being creative is a source of an experience, and a rewarding experience. And I think many people's lives are organized without adequate sources of worthwhile experience. They're overly adapted. They're constricted. They're whatever, but they're not getting a good vibe. Developing their capacity to express themselves in whatever way enriches them. And they can share that enrichment with others, and that can be a bridge, and it can take them places they can't go otherwise by staying on some adapted track and borrowing their way of being from conventional ways of being.
But you said earlier that one of the important things to do is to make being creative a priority.
To value it and to invest in it, yeah.
Well, thank you all, fellas, for being with us tonight. I want to thank certainly Kermit Poling, and it's nice to have you as our guest.
Oh, it's been fun.
Dr. Patrick Sewell, psychiatrist, writer, and stone artist, and Joe Bloom from Moonbot. Thank you guys for really contributing a lot. We really appreciate having you with us tonight.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance this evening by Wally Derleth and Daniel Gordy. Support for this program comes from the Knoll Foundation and also the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. You may listen to a podcast of this program on our website, redriverradio.org. I'm Shelley Visconti with Dr. Mark Vegan. Have a good evening.